Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women. In NASA, we have a drinking problem.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading Atmosphere by Taylor Jenkins Reid. And I'm starting a beer. So this book, which was originally published under the title, Nate, can you put like a big echo on this? Lesbians in Space. Space, space, space. they go to do some moon, you know, fucking spacewalk nonsense. It's a Challenger ripoff space shuttle thing. And it all gets fucked up. It's like they beef tripped. That's the best I could do with this week. It's cool. I mean, they went on a trip, but it's beef tripped. It's just upsetting sounding.
It is, yeah, for a beer.
The beef tripped. I mean, I was going to go for something much grosser about, like, you know, lady parts, but I figured let's ease into that. We build to those. This is from Hop Butcher for the world. And it's a Simcoe hopped triple IPA. Oh, and it's so good. Oh God, it's like finding you got selected out of the 2,000 applicants to be in NASA.
Mm.
So this is Taylor Jenkins Reid's latest abomination, and it came out a week ago.
And oh, we like the other two. They're fine.
The other two were better. They were
abominations.
Better. We haven't read the not famous ones. All right, this is her latest trashy beach read that's going to be wildly popular on Book Talk. How about that?
Yes.
And it sucks. Okay, so this is her space book, and it takes place in the 80s where she completely rips off the plot of that Sandra Bullock movie where George Clooney dies. What the heck was that, Gravity?
While You Were Sleeping?
Yeah, Speed. Speed 3, Space Control.
Gravity, yeah.
So there's a main character, Joan. I can't remember their names because they're fucking dumb. But Joan is a scientist who joins NASA when they start letting women in 1980. I don't know if that's when they actually did. That sounds about right because I don't remember any female astronauts
right
before Sally Ride.
Well, she was the first one. That's why.
I mean,
a lesbian.
Well, this
was
is
she?
The art imitates
yes.
life.
And I was NASA's once at like, a pub trivia, and one of the categories was famous lesbians. The question was like, "What are a famous astronaut?" And I went, "I don't know, Sally Ride," because it's literally the only name I could think of, and I got that point. And I was like, "Oh, I found out just now. I just guessed."
Educational pub trivia contest there. So NASA decides in the late 70s, like they have eliminated the possibility of space bears. So they're like, you know what? We can let women into space now.
It's safe.
It's not going to be a problem for the shuttle. And so they have this crew of cadets or whatever the fuck they're called. They had a name for them, like ass cans or something.
Oh, man,
like
that should have been our thing. You know, we got a big ass can of beer.
And I'm like, I didn't bother to look up what that was. But they astronaut candidates who basically act like they're college students, which maybe that's how it really is. And Joan is the main one who's super nerdy, and she's like never even been kissed because she doesn't know she's a lesbian yet.
Wait, did you say lesbian yet? Okay.
Is your beer called lesbian yet? Question mark.
No, this is just called the Pixie Dust. Special Pride Edition by Sloop. So I was like, you know what? I'm like, it's just sitting here getting condensated. So anyway,
Pixies can fly.
I'd drink it.
Like space shuttles.
They don't usually burn up on reentry.
We don't know that. We don't know much about their culture.
It's true. Okay, this is Pixie Dust New England IPA by Sloop, and it's good, yeah.
Is it different from the regular one? Or they just
no, I don't think so. I think they literally just put a different label on the can.
Mm. So not that proud.
I guess.
Maybe they just don't believe in labels.
God damn it. That should be, like, they should put out aluminum cans with nothing on it. Believe in labels.
Or just, like, stamped, you know, somewhere, just very subtly.
On the bottom.
Not very well on the side or on the bottom, yeah.
Where they put the expiration.
Well, I just feel like if they're only paying attention to the bottoms, that they're tipping their hand about their label. So Joan is one of the astronauts, and she makes friends with other dudes and the lady Vanessa. But like, it's cut back and forth in time. Like, that's the way to create suspense, because otherwise there really wouldn't be any suspense in this story.
I actually think it didn't really create any suspense in this one.
Well, this was her attempt to create suspense.
Loosely, yes. So the opening scene of the book is on space shuttle. Everything goes wrong. And so Joan is the capsule communicator, also known as Capcom, who is speaking, who has to speak. You know, she's the one who does all the communicating with the astronauts up in orbit. But something goes wrong, and she and her, and it starts with, you know, Vanessa thinks it's not fair that, you know, because they're monitoring everybody's heart rate. It's not fair that NASA can monitor my heart rate while Joan is speaking. So it's like, oh, well, there's a hint there. And it creates a little bit of suspense. But it was like, well, that's pretty fucking obvious.
But it's also one sentence. So like, you forget about it, because then there's like all the other, the male astronauts all eat shit and die instantly.
Yeah. Also, you don't know anyone's name yet, so these are all strangers. And then when it jumps back in time, you're like, are these the dead people or are these different people?
It's a small cast, and it's the same people. And they die of space explosion. Like, I don't even know what they died of.
The thing that they have to blow up to launch the satellite or whatever they're launching, the probe, it has little explosives around it so they can set it free into space. And one of the explosives
goes
wrong. Which
is not true.
It's true enough for this book.
Yeah, sure.
Which is made up.
So Taylor Jenkins Reid tried to actually add a lot of sort of real NASA space physics authenticity, and mostly did a good job.
It felt like a Crichton book at times.
Absolutely. Hardcore Crichton.
But I don't, you know, as far as I know, they didn't really use explosives to launch, to release satellites. Because, I mean, I know that, like, the Hubble Space Telescope only barely fit inside the bay of the space shuttle and literally got jammed on the way out. And so, like, but it was just literally the astronauts go and they just give it a push with their hands. That's how they launch it, right? So it doesn't matter that it's weighs several tons and it's huge. You can actually still push it without too much trouble. Though they're actually not that heavy anyway. But they don't need to use explosives to release clamps or anything like that. That's not a thing. And anyway, in this book, one of the clamps has has way too much explosives on it and kills. Okay, one of the astronauts gets killed by shrapnel, but then it also puts a couple of holes in the shuttle, including in the pressurized cabin. And so there is a frantic couple of pages where all the
about this part, because I wasn't sure. Like they mentioned, like we're supposed to close the airlock door when we do this, but let's just leave it open. Like I guess so they could like look or something. I don't understand.
Yeah, so and that was the purpose.
By doing that, did that cause the holes, or would the holes have happened anyway? Like, was it their fault for not closing it? I don't really understand enough.
From my understanding, or at least my imagination, the holes in, because it caused multiple holes, the holes would have happened anyway, but Vanessa, was that her name?
Vanessa was the one who's conscious the whole time.
I literally finished the book 15 minutes ago, and I've already forgotten their names. Vanessa, the guy who was on the spacewalk with her, he probably would have survived because the door would have been closed, or at least there would have been a window and metal between them, and okay, he may not have, you know, been immediately killed.
And that was, I think that was Mike.
Sure. He died very early, and
the guy with the wife and kid that they keep talking about, who's like the nice guy, I think. I'm not sure. Yeah,
but then it causes a couple of other holes, at least one hole in the pressurized, you know, a crew cabin because the astronauts, they don't actually spend the whole time in their spacesuits. That would be incredibly uncomfortable, and they would eventually fill up with poop. So you couldn't do that.
I just saw a thing that was like, astronauts don't shower. They just wear their clothes until they're too stinky, and then they put them in a capsule and throw them into the atmosphere.
So they wipe themselves down with rags, but you cannot take a shower in space. You know, you cannot really bathe.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they don't like change their clothes. They just They just get to like get really
stinky.
And they
mostly don't change their clothes until they get quite bad. Although they don't, they're not really doing work hard enough to like sweat a lot of the times. So, well, actually, that's not true. They, at least the guy, the men and women up on the whatever it's called, I'm forgetting totally.
Space station.
Space station. Yeah, that's it.
If only there was a word for a place you stay in space.
Yeah. What is that called? Could be anything.
Space stay place.
Space hotel. No. They actually have to do several hours of exercise every day. But for astronauts who are only going to be in space for 6 or 7 days, they'll be fine. They don't need to make them do several hours of exercise every day. Mm. But on the space station, they will lose all of their bones. Their bones will just like shrink, and their hearts will get so incredibly weak that it would be, you know, damaging. Their health would be damaged long-term if they didn't do quite a bit of exercise.
Is it true that people get fucked up in their bones because of, I don't know if it's cosmic rays or something that the atmosphere usually protects us from, that just, like, we get pelted with, but the atmosphere stops it. But in space, they get blasted by this other shit, and it makes
you sick. So astronauts get a much higher dose of radiation than we do down here on Earth. Although, believe it or not, airline pilots are classified as radiation workers because you actually get a higher dose of radiation flying at 35,000 feet. Now, it's higher. But if you don't do it all the time, you'll be fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. They are, in fact, radiation workers.
Weird. They don't have to wear that big lead vest over their dick.
No. Though the levels are still not that high, but they just get higher doses than we do down here on the planet, unless you work with the stuff, you know.
Well, that's all I needed from the book. Thanks. We're done.
Yep. All right. Join us next week. Anyway, so a lot of the NASA stuff is actually a lot of it is scientifically accurate. But what happens is there's a hole in the pressurized cabin, and it starts losing pressure really fast. Although I felt like if the hole was actually so big that the whole thing depressurized that fast, they also wouldn't have had nearly as difficult a time finding the hole. This is still like page 5 of the book. Some of the crew dies, some of the crew survives, but yet they have the bends really, really bad because they lose consciousness. They manage to patch the hole, but still lose consciousness. And some are just dead from like severe, from big bubbles of nitrogen in all of their veins and capillaries. And so they need major medical attention. The only one who survives that is Vanessa, because she's in her spacesuit.
Who survives and is conscious.
Yeah, and she's in her spacesuit and didn't get hit by shrapnel.
Even though she was like closest to the thing, she just got lucky.
Yep, just
for plot reasons.
Mm-hmm. And then, so she has to, you know, kind of fix everything, and NASA's immediately like, well, you're going to have to fly this thing down, and we're going to try and get you to fly it down in about 3 hours. And
I don't know. Die otherwise.
Yeah, well, so the people who are alive, who are still alive but need medical attention, they will die without medical attention pretty quickly. But yeah, anyway, this is actually only a very small part of the book, which was I was both relieved and disappointed that this wasn't more of the book. I was relieved that it didn't go on longer. But, you know, it's kind of both more interesting, or at least kind of for me, at least.
No, it was.
But also, it wasn't done that well, so I'm like, ugh.
It was done well enough if you don't know much about space. Like, I don't know enough, so for me, it was like, this is fine. I wasn't too worried about the inaccuracies of anything. It was just like, yeah, you know, it's dramatic.
So, meanwhile, most of the book is actually, it cuts back and forth a bunch of times, but most of the book is...
But it's still, like, 95% of the book is not that.
It's Joan becoming an astronaut, first getting into astronaut school. She was she has a PhD in physics, but was just teaching freshman physics at a college, and she applies and she gets it. And then she's in the second class of astronauts that has any women in it.
And she gets, does she get in the first, she gets rejected the first time, or does she get in?
No,
the
she doesn't apply.
Oh yeah.
So the very first round, she doesn't put in an application and then immediately regrets it. And so puts in an application for the second one.
It's like her shitty sister is like, hey, look, they're letting ladies do it. You should try. She's like, okay.
Yep. And so a bunch of stuff happens.
So then they act like fucking college students and flirt and drink a lot. And I just was under the impression that astronauts were really busy people. I kind of thought that they were like Olympic athletes. Like they only do this one thing and everything else is put on the back, not even on the back burner. There is one burner.
And not only that, but they're usually very accomplished in other fields before they even like become astronauts. There are a huge number of astronauts that were formerly Navy SEALs.
Or they're pilots, or they're PhDs in a hard science.
Like the first Apollo astronauts were all test pilots, were all like, fighter pilots who then became test pilots. But really, even in the spatial era, most of the, a lot of the astronauts are actually very accomplished in many other things. And they're not 22-year-old college students. They're more like 32, or they're, 35 and already have had a distinguished career in something else. Maybe they're 28, but they've already like have a PhD and a postdoc and all this other stuff. I know that a couple of stories, one of the first, that like the first commander of the space shuttle, which was who was a former Navy SEAL, a real astronaut, but he was also a Navy SEAL first. And somebody, he's in an interview after his space shuttle days, and somebody asked him, so what is your most refined skill, or what is your most like important skill? And he says, how to kill a man with a knife. And this was a space shuttle commander. Maybe he was a space station commander, one of those two. Anyway, he was an astronaut, and he was clearly still a military guy.
Really helpful skill in space.
Well, yeah, even guns don't work, so you have to use a knife.
No, actually, guns do work.
Damn it.
They work.
This isn't the bullet
just
train.
Fine.
The rules I just made up in my head are all bullshit now.
It's all about the relative velocity. I don't know, I'm just making that sounds like a real science term.
The biggest problem is guns overheating. Okay, back to the book. So she's in astronaut training, and they do act like teenagers who just go out drinking every weekend, and that seems to be a bigger part of the book.
Class. There are multiple times like I was supposed to go practice, but I bailed. I feel like the moment you bail on a practice thing, NASA's like, "Go fuck yourself! You're not going into space now."
Yeah, I mean they didn't really mention how old or accomplished these people are, except for we know Joan was already had a PhD and was a college professor, and they gave her a shitty class because she's a woman. But the others, and like we know Vanessa was a pilot, but not a military pilot because she was a woman. And the dude, because they're separated, like, these are the pilots, and they're here to fly and fuck shit up, and here's the nerds, and they do nerd stuff. But they're all professional age, but we don't know much about them
They might be 30, but they act 22.
Yeah.
Which was...
And they're all like, hooking up, but secretly, and also... But also,
It's called docking when you do it. NASA.
But a lot of people at the realistic astronaut age of 30 something are often already married and stuff. So I bet that's a lot less common among real astronauts.
I just think they're so busy. I feel like the training is so intense.
You have to
intense.
Be hyper focused to even get in. Like you're not gonna be I'm gonna go get beers and go party with the dudes and skip out on pilot day.
They're very driven, very competitive people. Yeah,
only one character was that in this.
Yeah, the bitch Lydia. Everyone hates her.
The one who acted like we would think an astronaut would act like. They're not the non-pilot ones.
Yeah, did you ever see The Right Stuff or read that book by Tom Wolfe?
I know it exists.
The book is a bit long. There's a lot of passages about how many times guys have a fucking thermometer up their asshole in space, because they all did. But like comically large thermometers, like a 9-inch thermometer was up John Glenn's ass when he was launched into space. That's how they got him up there. They were like, poink, and he just flew up. He was like, oh my God. And they were like, that's the right stuff, baby.
That seems like a dangerous time to have it in there. What if it gets jostled?
They need to know for science the exact temperature of your asshole in space. How else will we beat the Russians? We don't know your rectal temperature.
This is your patriotic duty.
No, this is regular duty.
But like usually, like it was all like, I'm sure this part of the culture did not go away by the fictional 1980 Challenger mission here, but it was like competitive dudes, macho, like everything is a contest, and who can show who has, it's Tom Wolf coined it, the right stuff, like who actually can, who has the right skills, the right temperament, the right mindset. And none of the characters in this book do, and yet inexplicably, all the friends get picked to go into space. So I get it. Like, she had to take some license because a book about actually being an astronaut would have been fucking really boring. And just them doing routine drills.
We ran the simulation for the 47th time.
Yeah.
But they do those drills over and over and over again.
She mentioned those in passing, like, then we did the drills again and did with this thing, but like it was all the actual like training stuff happened like in the background, and the, by the way, we are also doing these stuff while we fuck around.
Which I was both disappointed and also relieved.
That is the theme of this more book.
I was disappointed while I read it and relieved when it ended. That's true. So there's all this happening, and a lot of the times that Joan has to bail is to go take care of Frances, the precocious, cute girl.
The talking mule. Frances the talking mule?
Is that a thing?
Isn't it? Am I making that up? Am I losing my mind?
I have never heard of
this. Is that like a character on Lamb Chop? What do you know?
Frances the talking mule was a 1950 comedy family movie.
Wow, that is a topical reference, Jimmy.
Nate, you were there.
I starred in that movie.
How did you feel when they turned
into
blue?
Oh my God, it's a 7-film collection.
Good Lord.
Francis is this like a, beat like a Mr. Mr. Ed. No, no, Francis came first.
Dr. Ed. Please, please, my, Mr. Ed is my father.
They call me Mr. Ed.
But she's her easy sister's bastard child that exists just to create some interfamilial drama later in the book.
Because her sister has zero redeeming qualities.
She actually gets dramatically worse as the book goes on.
That's true.
In the beginning of the book, it's like, oh, she was a girl who made some, you know, not great decisions.
She got knocked up when she was young. It happens.
But when she gets knocked up in college, Joan is like, oh, I really got to help her because she already had one miscarriage in high school. And you're like, wow, it really laid it on thick, Taylor. she was like, I don't know who the dad could be. And this was before, you know, Ricky Lake and shit, so there was no way to find out who the dad was. And she just, you know, she's working as a secretary.
They had DNA tests back then, didn't they?
I think they
1980?
They did. I don't know how. I think that was probably pretty expensive and court-ordery kind of thing to do. Not quite as easy as it is today, perhaps.
He was some drifter on a train she met.
Oh, there was a train. So she's constantly going to like make hamburgers with her niece, who's the, I did the audiobook. There were two voice actors, right? There were two women. They kind of,
I had that question as well,
which wasn't necessary.
Not at all.
I was like, how is she doing that with her voice? Well, I was impressed with her skill.
She does a terrible job for most of the voices, and then she does a very different woman's voice for this one character. It's like she put all her energy into Joan and Vanessa, and every man is just, I don't know, I think it's probably a big deal, gotta go into space. And that's how they all talk. And then there's the child, just fucking grown woman, going like, yay, you're the best aunt. So annoying. Holy shit, I wanted that kid to get killed in space because it was so irritating. Oh, and then can we have ice cream? It was so bad.
Milkshake. Oh, they kept getting peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at diners.
To dunk into milkshakes. Because that, I can only assume, is in the book, is what lesbians eat. Because that is... She did all this research about NASA.
Wait,
lesbians eat.
I have to call a friend right now.
Just because that's when Vanessa's like, hey, you know what's even better than eating a milkshake in a Subaru? dunking a peanut butter and jelly sandwich into it. And they're like, that's a thing a serial killer does. That's what you eat when you are wearing someone's skin as a mask. She's like, no, try it. And then they do, and they go, this is so good. We're going to do this every day forever.
Lord Jesus.
That is in this book.
But
again,
she doesn't,
I have to assume
she,
it's real.
She does this before she discovers she's a lesbian, because there is a significant portion where one of the men, I think it was Griff, is like always, you know, touching her hip and like smiling at her. And she's just like, I feel nothing at all of warmth towards humanity.
Yeah.
Like, you might not be gay. You might be something else. I don't know. But
she had to learn about space to learn about herself. Like, that's the Lifetime movie that was this book. That's the tagline.
It was very, at times, like Chicken Soup for the Soul level, like melodrama.
But with speeches that were just directly lifted from Cosmos. And
yeah,
there and was these, one, definitely.
They're like, we are all stardust. They just kept saying shit. I really expected at one point, like, we're already on Spaceship Earth. But, and they stole from, I'm pretty sure it was in, it's just the classic way to demonstrate space-time and gravity, and like is like the sheet with the bowling ball, and like how it like sinks in, and you like roll a quarter past it.
The mattress thing, yeah.
I know I've seen that in one of the Stephen Hawking books. If either it's A Brief History of Time or Universe in a Nutshell has a diagram of that exact thing. But they have these speeches, and then there's the women characters are constantly like, a guy will make a very lazy joke, like the kind I make.
I got a joystick you could ride.
Exactly. They're like, oh yeah, I got a, you know, like this rocket. They're terrible. They're so easy. And then all the men are just like, high five, bro. Like they're at a fucking 1986 beach volleyball game.
Let's tap then, penises.
Yeah. Show the ladies what we're working with. Double acorn. So they're doing that.
Double acorn.
What yeah, you know, does that's mean? What our handshake is called. That's what we've been calling for years, Jimmy. It's the double acorn.
It's like those two sets of balls that like come together and they twist around each other.
Yeah, that's torsion, baby. That is that's flying close
gonna
to the
see
sun.
The space doctor after that. Space doctor. You got a space doctor.
But they're like, they'll make these jokes, and then all the women. The only response I could do is just go like, oh, this is so hard. It's so hard being a lady astronaut. Apparently, the shuttle can't crash through one glass ceiling. And they make these fucking awful speeches. And they're like, don't you get it? This isn't about... And it's, I get it. This is what a middle schooler needs to read. This is not a book for adults. This is fucking pablum.
This is done much better in Evelyn Hugo book, which was about, you know, about being a lesbian before it was socially acceptable. But it was done much better than this. It was really, really simplistic.
But like, these are people, I would guess, that like, you're like, hey, do you want to go into fucking outer space? You might be like, yeah, that's the goal. I'm gonna be able to table some other shit until I am in the fucking like out of this planet.
Most astronauts want to be astronauts so badly they would put up with anything.
Some would go gay, even if they weren't. You're like, yeah, whatever.
I'll put the ass in astronaut.
I will do whatever it takes to get into space. I swear to God.
Blow out my O-rings. Fine.
I don't need them. Got to wear a diaper on the space shuttle anyway, right?
I sucked the commander's dick, had a certain tang to it. But this was the same thing with that shitty Sandra Bullock movie. I think it was Louis C.K. had that bit where she's like a reluctant astronaut. And he's like, that doesn't exist. There's, and he was on like one of those.
I wasn't even
Kimmel.
Supposed to be here today.
Yeah, like they're like, here, let's role play. Let's pretend I'll be like the NASA commander and you be the astronaut. But you don't want to go, right? You go, hey, do you want to go to the space? And I go, I don't really know. It's like, well, fuck you. No. Like, unless all you want to do is go into space, they're not going to take you. And all these are like, oh, this is very annoying. And the inexplicably named Antonio, because let's be real, if it was really this sexist still, it was also very racist still.
He could have been some kind of Italian.
They're not. I don't know. Were they white people yet by 1980? I don't know when they became white people.
It depends on what state you lived in.
When did, like, the RICO laws go into effect? I think that has something to do with that.
I mean, they got Capone in the 50s.
30s?
I don't remember, yeah.
It was the 80s when they got all the big New
York guys. What about the RICO Suave laws? When did those go into effect?
That's San Antonio. Mi amor. Space. So, this is all happening, and it's ridiculous. And then they go on a fateful trip, not to space, but to New Orleans, because they have spring break in its astronaut camp. And they go to a strip club. And
she's like, Joan, what are those?
She's like, holy shit. That is the tits.
Their penises are so small. I didn't know they got that small.
I guess I'm just really into small dicks.
Joan does say, oh, I see why men like this so much.
And she, you know, I had a lot of angles to use this beer, but I'll choose the tame one here. And she's like, I know what I like now. I'm a grown-ass cat. This is her fat orange cat, and it's called I'm a Grown-Ass Cat. And it kind of does look like a stripper there on the can. You can see she's got a, not stripper, but, you know, a little risque outfit.
Yeah.
And this is a Imperial Stout with coconut. Dancer. I'm a grown-ass cat. Delicious. Fantastic. Much better than the food at a strip club.
That's
if true. They have anything that they allege is crab, it is not. That's not the kind of crabs you
imitation
get
crab.
Oh, yeah. Like imitation lump.
The wasabi is fake, too. It's horseradish.
Imitation lump is when I put a wadded up pair of socks in my crotch to make it look like I have a bigger bulge. So they go there, and Joan's like, holy shit, I'm a space lesbian. And then Vanessa, who was the only one that didn't move into the same basically dorm as the rest of them, because she's been secretly lezzing out on the outskirts of town.
And in skirts.
They realize. Oh, well played. I set that up there. I didn't realize. She's like, read my lips. No, but they get into, they become friends, and it's painfully fucking obvious to the reader, but like they're going to end up together.
Also, because she hinted at it on page 1, so you know. So
I missed that entirely.
I completely. Oh, okay. I didn't even know which one was in space for a while.
Oh, so. Yeah. I was like, is she the unconscious one? I don't know.
It took me a little while, but an astute reader would have known this even sooner. But don't worry. Taylor Jenkins Reid is into tantra. She's going to make you wait for that load. And then what happens, Nate?
Joan, because she's both a PhD physicist, a very good classical concert pianist, and
she doesn't like.
And also good at drawing, she, instead of going to sleep after the strip club, has to draw all these drawings of the women she saw.
Hey, man, and, like your French girls.
Yes, basically. And then later Vanessa is like, oh, you mean you drew the one that looked like me? So it's like halfway through the book, 40% of the way through the book, something like that. And then finally, Jonah and Vanessa realize that they love each other, or they're into each other. I do not remember how that happened, actually.
They have one of those like really, really close, breathy conversation where it's like, you know what you are, you know what I am, you know what you want. And they're like, yes, we're in love now.
And then they get together and say, this explains why I always love tuna salad so much. And then they are together. She's like, you are... This is the best. But because it's 1984, and they're in Florida? Where are they?
They're in Florida.
They have to be secret lesbians.
Which is true.
Probably was, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, doesn't make the book throughout good. This... These characters are all, like, one and a half dimensional. Like, there's no depth to any of the characters.
Hmm.
Except they are a man who is annoying, or a woman... One woman who is annoying, or a woman who is a lesbian.
There's one good
guy. So
they
have a couple of... Well, he's okay.
Because he gets married off.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, was that Steve? I don't even know. Hank?
I thought he was... Hank. Hank? Hank and
Hank,
Donna.
But it's also named Griff.
Like propane.
Are they the same person?
But that they have these conversations when they're hanging out to give them depth. And one of them is they argue over, what is the best space song? And they're like... it's Space Oddity, obviously. And no one's like, no, it's Starman. But and they're like, well, at least it's David Bowie. And then some guy's like, no, it's Rocket Man. Like, that's number two. Shut the fuck up, Greg, or whatever his name was. And then Joan, I think, she's like, there was a really good Bert and Ernie song about space. And like, what is, who let you hear? And that's character development.
So now they're immediately together.
They want to move in, but it's
they want to move in.
Lesbian stereotype.
Yeah. So they don't,
also they have
don't.
To be secret. They can't ever move in because they have to be secret lesbians.
Because not only is it, you know, it's not like it's illegal, and it's, but it's it could get them booted from the space program because this is still the 80s, and they have the highest moral standards. For the 80s.
Also, NASA was very conscious of its image with the public. I mean, the astronauts are celebrities, and, you know, and also, but they rely on funding from Congress, and a lot of those senators are very conservative. One time on this, not the space shuttle, but the space station, they sent up a Christmas meal that included a tiny little serving of wine, just like the tiniest amount. And somehow the public found out about it, and conservative Christians made an uproar. Like, how can they drink alcohol on, you know, a public salary? And they made them not drink it. NASA made them not drink their tiny little, like, swallow of wine to go on Christmas.
Someone boofed that. Only way you can get drunk on that amount of wine.
I didn't drink it.
I saw a thing, I don't know if it's apocryphal, but I believe it, was they like, when it's sending one of the first women to space, and she's only going up for like a week, and they ask her how many boxes of tampons she'd need.
I'm going to need an entire shuttle's worth.
No, and the answer was, and they said, would 100 be enough? This is for 7 days. This is for one set. This is Sally Ride, actually.
It's a real thing.
Really asked Sally Ride that question.
You have one of those innie penises, right? How many of these magic sticks do you need?
And if you let them out into space, will it attract wildlife? To bury it like your scat?
That's where the space bears come in.
The space bears. I did the audiobook. I couldn't highlight text, but I wrote this one down because it was so good. How can her heart sink in microgravity? This is during one of the crisis scenes when she's like, they're dying. And how can her heart sink in microgravity? So they're secret lesbians. And Barbara, the sister, remember her? She's there. She starts going on dates with some character who we never fucking meet in the book, I don't think.
She runs through a few dudes.
And she finally hooks up and secures a rich guy, which is what she's been looking for the whole time. She wants a rich daddy. That creates some drama there because she doesn't give her sister an invitation to her wedding.
She doesn't give her a plus one.
Well, she doesn't even give her an invitation. Yeah. She's like, I don't even give you a paper one. They're expensive, which is weird.
Oh, right. You're married a rich guy. You should assume you're invited, which I guess that makes some amount of sense if you're a narcissist.
I don't know. I feel like if you're a narcissist, wouldn't you want people to like get the fucking obnoxious invitation from you?
Well, the idea, I guess, if we were to really go into the character development of this, which is dumb because there isn't any.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
She doesn't have to ask her sister to do anything. She just assumes she will because that's how it's been her whole life. Take the kid. I have to go get double stuffed. You know, take her for a weekend and like bail me out. Do all this other stuff. So it's like, I'm just assuming you're doing this. You know, it doesn't occur to her to provide any niceties. It's just you're going to do whatever I need.
That makes sense. She also does at one point say like, oh, you don't understand how hard it is for me. Why are you judging me? It's like, well, you know what? One sister is a PhD astronaut and the other one was, you know, an easy girl. Like, you know, is this, you know, trying to figure her life out. One of them is kind of in a position to judge everyone's choices.
No shitting on single moms, but she doesn't appear to do anything other than like
the worst. She is the worst. She's constantly just not showing up because she has dates. And
she's like leaving her kid outside to get picked up later, but it's like, oh, just sit in the front yard until someone come get you.
So Barbara sucks, the biggest one. If that's what it takes to get a husband, hey-o.
And she's always talking to her sisters, is like, it's hard to get a dude. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what love is, or whatever the fuck.
You never heard that REO Speedwagon song.
You've never had a boyfriend because, you know, you don't care about love. You don't need someone. I don't know. I don't know what the fuck she was thinking.
She's just a one-dimensional character.
Yeah.
And it is not subtle. This whole plot line is so...
You could see it coming so from obvious. Space.
Yes, exactly.
This is the Great Wall of China.
You definitely could. So at first she doesn't get an invitation. It's like, you haven't been on a date in 20 years. You don't know what, you don't know how to love. And like she's an android.
She's like, well, how about I just bring a friend? And she's like, a friend, she says. You don't have those either. You fucking uggo loser. I do have a friend. She's a nice lady. He's like, oh my God, you're going to bring a woman? What are you, some sort of fucking, you know? And then the husband takes her into the other room and she comes back and he's like, we would like to invite you to bring a guest if that makes you fucking happy, cunt. And then she's like, oh, thanks.
Do you think that he said, look, your sister's definitely gay, just let her bring this lady? Or he's just like, just be nice. I don't know what he said because he doesn't have any direct lines other than, can I see you in the other room in the entire book?
So listen, I know I'm a rich daddy, but I cannot afford to keep replacing the carpet this bitch is munching. You need to just understand what we're dealing with here. And she's like, oh, fine, Dan. But that means I'm sending my child to boarding school.
Which was also predictable. It's like, oh, wow, he's definitely going to send that kid to boarding school. And then it fucking happened. Oh.
So that's all happening, too. And cutting back and forth through these scenes of, like, what was the one in space? Vanessa? Vanessa, like... I have to close 4,000 latches to close this door. And they're like, you got to close all the latches or the space monster gets you. And she's like, okay, I'll close them.
Space ghost
and
skin.
That's the whole conflict. Okay, after everybody dies. But then the conflict of like, we can't.
It's like a slasher movie, but there's no killer. They just all just die gradually.
And they're like, and it's a long scene of, oh no, there are this many latches and like it's bent from the damage, but I can't get it closed. And it's like, why did that go on so long? And
this is because when they allowed women astronauts, they got rid of that, can you open a pickle jar test? And so the standards were lowered and none of them could close these latches. The space latches were unclosable to their little feminine hands, Nate.
The 80s was a different time.
Unintended consequences.
So I feel like the actual space shuttle is incredibly complex. When it was built, it was the most complex machine ever made. So there could have been. Well, that doesn't exist. So
it's a myth.
You'd have to find it first.
But the space shuttle is incredibly complicated. You would think that there could have been a more interesting thing when it comes to like, oh, we have to now deorbit the shuttle and bring it back to Earth. You would think there would be something more complex than the door won't close.
This is just ripped off from fucking 2001. It closed the pod bay doors, Hal.
Yeah.
I'm afraid you can't do that, bitch. That's what's happening here. Close the pod bay doors, gal. That's what it is. That's what's happening in this scene. No, it's fucking, it's so, I mean, I guess she was, it's a love story. That's the subtitle, right? Atmosphere, a love story. It's not a science fiction book.
It's a love She's story like, with a set against the backdrop of the Challenger explosion.
We've been waiting 39 years for one. It's time. So she wasn't going to, I think, yeah, she didn't want to go down in that rabbit hole of actual hard science fiction. She wanted softcore lesbian porn is what she wanted for the rest of the book, not hardcore science fiction. But I agree, that fucking ridiculously simple thing.
It went on a long time, and yet it was still only 5% of the book, because the vast majority was training and them being together, but not telling anyone.
And when you learn about Vanessa, she's like, oh, yeah, no, my dad either left. No, he died.
He was a pilot in Vietnam or Korea.
Korea, there you go. And so, and I didn't have a dad, and I, you know, was doing it when I was a teenager. I was doing all these drugs, and then I realized, oh, flying, this is way cooler. And so I wanted to be a pilot. And I've always wanted to pilot the space, and I've piloted the space shuttle, but they won't let me because I'm not a military pilot. I'm only a civilian pilot. So they won't let me pilot. And they said, you know, and because women can't be military pilots, therefore a woman can never pilot the space shuttle. But then she's the only one alive, or she's the only one conscious on the space shuttle. So she will get to. Now, I know women have piloted the space shuttle. I don't know if they had by 1984 or whenever this is. But I wonder, so I actually don't know what NASA has, what NASA would do in the case of like the main pilot. Or they probably have several people that can pilot the space shuttle, but what if the pilot, who is not necessarily the commander, but the pilot, would be incapacitated? They must have a plan for that, because they have plans for everything. They have a plan
for when that fails too. I'm sure they have...
Yeah, multiple backup plans.
Yeah.
They use a space catapult to launch another pilot up there.
So I can only assume that if they have a trained pilot, they would have given them training. They would have given them training to pilot it even in an emergency.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps somebody that's never flown before, they wouldn't bother, but, you know.
But there was a lady pilot, and during all those training sessions, she had to go make pies or something, so she couldn't do that.
They kept mentioning, like, your time with the pilots, but they didn't always really say what they were doing. Like, oh, I've got to get more flight time in. It was like, are they just sitting in a plane while another person flies them? Like, that much? Do you need that much of that?
When you're already a pilot, and flying the space shuttle is not like flying, I mean, it's somewhat like flying other planes, but it is also way different because it's huge, and when you're deorbiting, you have no engines. You are a glider. It does not, it only falls down from space, and you have one chance to put it on the runway. You cannot, like, deviate, you know, there's only one, so there are multiple landing runways they can go to, but still, you do not get a chance to, like, oh, I guess we didn't make it, let's go around, let's go up and try it again. Nope, you have one chance because you have no engines.
No, I mean, for the pilots, I get it, the 110, they got to do that, but, like, Joan kept having to, like, schedule her pilot time where she sat strapped to a chair while they did, like, maneuvers and, like, made her throw up all the time. This is going to do a lot of flight time.
Also, NASA has access to the best anti-nausea drugs. Like, they are all taking them, like, a ton of the time.
That makes sense.
I know that the early Apollo astronauts, or the early Mercury astronauts, absolutely threw up everywhere. They was, like, several of those, like, famous dudes, military, fighter pilots, they are very tough guys, absolutely just puked their brains out when they went up, but... They knew that at the time, and there's even a scene with the Vomit Comet, which is the plane that they do
parabolic flight,
you know, where you can get like 28 seconds of zero G. You know, everybody goes on there. They give you some very advanced anti-nausea medication, which NASA definitely had by the 80s. They were prepared for this. NASA has a plan for fucking everything. They definitely had a plan for people getting car sick.
But how would those hot lady astronauts keep their figure if they weren't, you know, also bulimic, Nate?
If they weren't purging?
They have to think about the male time. Astronauts' needs, Nate. This is still, like, you know, the era of Top Gun. That's, but it doesn't have to make any sense.
You know what I did this weekend? I went to...
You threw up a lot?
I went to the carnival, and I rode the carnival rides. And let me tell you, they are a lot harder on your body at 38 than they are when you are 12. And I was getting, like, I was on the zipper. I was like, because I was on the zipper thing. We're in the middle of reading this book. And I was like, this must be what the astronauts feel like. Like, I'm feeling the G-force. Just like,
you see that? What's that thing where they just spin them in a goddamn circle? And that's like this 15 G's and they just black out.
Oh, yeah, the thing, the astronaut thing. Yeah, they spin it until you liquefy on your insides.
It's like you could also do it much more efficiently by just going to Chipotle, and your insides will liquefy too.
But it's worth it.
Yeah, that's the first phase of NASA training is going to a carnival. Because if you could eat that dog shit food and get spun around in a circle, you'll be ready for a whole bunch of tang and paste and outer space.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so the book is dumb and continues.
So eventually Joan
take us home.
Gets picked.
Please,
to
God.
to go to orbit and up in the space shuttle, and it only talks about how she was throwing up for 3 days, which is where, like, yes, they would give you medication.
She was space pregnant.
Yeah, they didn't even say what she did in space.
She did nothing.
Nothing about that. There was nothing.
But the guy's like, "I liked your experiments." Like, that's like,
what experiments? Said to her. They just said that she puked, and then the last
can
day
ladies
she
go
didn't
in space was the experiment.
It was crazy that her being in space was like a footnote in the book. And when she gets back, she's like, I checked my messages because my Francis called me like, motherfucker, you were in space and no one's even talking about it. What's happening?
Hey, I guess you're out. Give me a call when you get this.
I guess you're out. TV. Like you knew me being out is on TV.
Here, there's something happened with some male astronauts. I don't know about women ones, but yeah, it's like it goes by like a. It's like, did she actually ever go into space? But yeah, she does. And then she comes back, and Antonio is like, "You're gonna be great. You're gonna." And she's like, "I want to go be the. I don't want to go to space anymore. I want to be the what the fuck is it called? Capcom.
Capcom. Which Sally Ride really did after space? She became the capsule communicator.
Been there, done that.
Joan gets back from space, and she has messages on her answering machine, which was a newfangled gadget back in
Infinity. That and the space shuttle.
Yeah, more important. With Lydia, who's in boarding school, like, oh, I could you just, like, call me back and stuff? I'm sad. I was like, oh, mom's not coming out for Thanksgiving. I'm not going home for Thanksgiving. I'm just, you know, oh, they have we don't actually have a party. It's just me and one teacher. And I'm sad. And Lydia's like, what the fuck? And then goes over to her sister's house and says, how could you fucking do this? And Barbara's like, she's just so impossible. I just wanted a man who would pay for everything for me. And it's so fucking annoying. Anyway, and so Joan is like, oh, fine, I'll take her. He's like, really? Will you? It's like, okay, sure. So she goes up, pulls her out of boarding school. It says, you're going to live with me now. Like, yay, great. But then the NASA commander also says, oh, by the way, in order to, you know, continue working here, you have to make sure that you can pass a security background check because we actually have some secret missions, which is true. The Air Force funded half of the space shuttle so they could put, like, spy satellites in orbit so that the space shuttle could also do that. And it's when it is back in 2010 or something like that, when the Air Force decided they would no longer fund the space shuttle, that they actually pulled the plug on the space shuttle in total, maybe 2009, something like that. So they do have secret missions where they put spy satellites into orbit. But the commander says, you know, everybody has to pass a security background check because we have classified missions. And, you know, if someone is... I forget the term he used. A sexual deviant.
Sexual deviant, yeah.
Or something morally suspect or something like that. We can't do it. And she's like, oh no. They know. And so for the first time.
Just for the record, I don't really care. I kind of think it's hot. But just, you know, tell who needs to know.
Because Vanessa is scheduled to go up on the next flight. And he's like, hey, by the way, don't be gay.
Because they'll blackmail you. And she's like, it's the 80s. Girls just want to have fun. And he's like, oh, no, it's hot. So then she goes to Vanessa. They know. They know. We must have been so obvious. Probably when I parked our Subarus next to each other.
So finally, there's some actual conflict in the book.
Barely.
Where Joan, well, some. Where Joan is like, no, we can't keep doing this because they know. And I know your dream has always been to fly the space shuttle. So I have to break up with you. And Vanessa's like, no, that's what I used to want. Past tense. Now I want you. And then they're like, okay, fine. We'll make it work. but we're not going to talk about it because your flight's in 2 weeks, and then we'll figure it out after that. But that's when the accident happens, and then there's another, there's one more piece of conflict, a little bit sort of, but also not really, where Vanessa is like, wait, Lydia will die. So, okay, I can't get the pod bay doors closed. And NASA's like, well, we want you to continue working on that because we don't know if the space shuttle will survive. And Vanessa's like, no, Lydia needs to get down to Earth now. She's the only one still alive. I'm doing this. And I don't care if they fire me. I'm taking us down. And I still feel like deorbiting the shuttle is more complicated than just like, hey,
point it at the Earth.
Put it into low gear.
Well, they're like, you can stay up there for another trip around the Earth and keep closing it, or you can just go now, but it'll probably explode. But if you don't go now, Lydia will die. It's like, well, she's going to die either way because this thing's going to explode, so I might as well try it. And they're like, no. She's like, I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm an independent woman.
I mean, I was on the spaceship where everybody else died. They're not sending me back no matter what I do. So, but then there are these fucking agonizing passages. And it's not agonizing because it's like emotional. It's just because they're fucking terrible. Of Joan and Vanessa talking because in secret code. She's like, Roger that. Les be friends or whatever she says, and then she's like, it's a code, no one will know it. And then they just keep saying messages to each other. It's like, remember that time when we all talked about David Bowie? And like, no, why would I fucking remember that?
I've got a lot going on right now.
A space emergency. He is a star man. And the boss guy, is it Antonio or was there a guy named Jack? I feel like there was also a guy named Jack at some
Jack point. Jack is like the boss that gives the orders that's never in the book.
And Jack's like, say what she needs to hear. And she's like,
he's a real Sam Elliott type. He's definitely got a mustache.
Oh, I mean, he was a man in the early 80s. He did have a mustache. He was a cookie duster. And he's like, just tell her what she has to hear, you know. So I want that goddamn shuttle back.
Those are expensive.
Like, well, if I told her what she wanted to hear, my mouth would be full. She wouldn't. Are you going? You know, he like knows. He's like, I'm cool with the secret space lesbians. Sometimes I get that magazine. And they go, and then they get to the point where they get, like, they say, like, as much as they can. They're like, I just really love Ulysses S. Grant. You know what I'm saying? And she's like,
I love you too, famous upcoming band.
That had one song out last week. Did you hear it?
They just have these like dumb conversations, and then they go into, Nate, is this real? The 10-minute no radio moment?
I think that's real, yeah.
All right.
It's like because the radio can't get through like the ionosphere or some shit. They're like right in the taint of radio play.
So, okay, when the space shuttle comes in from orbit, it compresses the atmosphere so much that that it actually turns to plasma outside, in sort of the right outside the shuttle. That's all like the fire you see outside the shuttle. Atmosphere? Yes. Well, it starts at 17,000 miles an hour, and so when it comes in, when it descends, it's actually going even faster. So it actually speeds up, but there's so much friction with the atmosphere at that speed that I believe it is true. So plasma is does something with electricity, because the plasma doesn't have electrons anymore, or something like that. It freely gives up its electrons within blocks.
Something about signals, free radicals.
Something like that. Anyway, I think this might be true, where they can't communicate for a few minutes.
I don't think it's as long as the book.
The book made it like 10 minutes.
Was it 10 in this book? I don't remember. Yeah.
You just heard it.
It's a little bit. It's going pretty fast. It's like got to get to the atmosphere pretty quick, I guess, right?
In the book, the time was 10 minutes, yeah.
Oh, well, that's a long time, yeah.
So, of course, the moment they say they're like, you know, I love you in case things don't go wrong message, there's the blackout period. And Joan's like, why didn't I say what I really felt? And she's like, we could have. And she lays out their potential life together. And it is an incredible lesbian stereotype. She's like, we could have moved to some small New England town. and we could have had matching crew cuts, and we could have like opened up an antique shop together, and we could have held hands sometimes, and you know, listened to Katie Lang, and it would have been. She like goes through half of that is in the book. You could figure out which half, and then she's was like, "Why didn't I say it? Oh, I'm such a fool." And then someone's like, "Pretty sure that 10 minutes is up." And she's like, you know, Houston or whatever the fucking, what was it called?
Capcom.
Homecoming? Navigator. What the hell was the name of the ship?
Oh, Navigator.
Navigator.
Navigator, yeah. Which was confusing as fuck to me in the beginning, because like, is someone the Navigator? Like,
no, it was a Lincoln Navigator. They put a big rocket on it. So much trunk space.
She's like, Navigator, are you there? Nothing. I should have known. She's fucking just obliterated. She's dead.
She's not even dust.
Yeah, she's just vaporized. And I guess they had like no camera or something. They had like no eyes on this. No one was looking. Wouldn't you see it like a fucking shooting star if the ship just turns into
where,
a fireball?
They know where it's coming down.
Yeah, but like, but how could they be in this mission control? And be like,
I'm saying, like,
well, she's not answering her phone. I guess she evaporated.
I'm saying, like, they know where it's coming down. Like, you'd think they would be looking.
Yeah. It makes no sense. They're all just listening to a dial tone. Just like, I think I'm on hold still.
It's just smooth jazz.
Is this Sade? She's like, God damn it, why didn't I say it? We could have lived this idyllic lesbian life. And then all of a sudden, and you're like, well, that makes sense. Because after that long, tortured passage, that's the only logical conclusion for the story, right? And then there's like literally one paragraph where Vanessa goes, no, I'm here. I made it. It's fucking great. And she's like, oh, we could be together. The end.
Yeah.
And that's how yep. It's like the last, like, oh, they could have it. They could have that life. It is so abrupt. It is so sudden, this resolution. And then the book is over.
Yeah. They fucked up. It was like the ending was, it was a cop out. I mean, it still would have been a cheesy love story if she died. But that's the only decent ending to this is, yeah, space sucks. Be like, just kidding, everything got better. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, the end. That's dumb. That's dumb.
Well, you couldn't write a sequel if she died.
Yeah, coming next summer, Troposphere.
It's the next 11 minutes of the story. With a flash forward to their bed and breakfast. But you know what? The thing that also, if you're going to bring her back, then you have to, you don't have to, obviously, because she didn't. Because then the story is, what do you do afterwards as two women who are together in the 80s who can't be actors anymore because now they're gay? Well, I'm not going to figure that part out. That's hard. So I'm just going to end the book. Like, she's now adopted her niece. Her niece is going to figure it out. He's like, oh, we're just going to go live with my very good friend Vanessa. We only have room for one bedroom, though, so just, like, don't ask about it. Don't tell anyone at school. Like, it takes away
and
all...
And wear earplugs at night.
Yeah. Like, that would be a story, like, well, how do you go about doing that? That would be the conflict is, do they have to come out? But we don't know, because that part that you would then have to answer if she lives never happens. So you can't have it fucking both ways. It wouldn't have made the book better. It was still corny. And I liked her other books, the ones we read. I haven't read all the books. I liked them.
This one was cliche, corny nonsense.
Yeah, schlock. It wasn't good. It wasn't the worst thing. But it was mostly like cliche romance tropes. You know, I thought it was going to be the first half of the book. I thought it was going to be that she was like asexual, which is like, oh, okay, that's a deep cut. There hasn't been a lot of asexual romance books. Let's see where she goes with this. It's like, oh, she's just gay. Like these days, half of the romance books are gay, which, you know, cool, whatever. But like, it's not like, wow, bold.
Neither half are curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so predictable and so corny. And just way too many speeches that are meant to be inspiring and didactic for us younger audiences who don't remember a less tolerant time.
Maybe even younger than us.
Yeah,
not,
yeah.
Not just an old shot at Nate, like me
she's
and you
like
even.
Our age, probably, Taylor Jenkins. I mean, she's like 40, probably.
But, you know, even when we were kids, saying something was gay was an insult. Like, it wasn't as bad as
still
the 80s,
some
certainly.
Of us.
Yeah. It's definitely...
Depends on how many beers I've had.
I mean, what Matthew Shepard was in the fucking 90s, right?
Yeah.
Yes, so, I mean, we certainly didn't grow up in the 60s or this time exactly, but we're close to it. We were born in the late 80s, so...
Yeah, because, like, Boys Don't Cry, wasn't that, like, inspired by that? And that was, like...
Was it Matthew Shepard based? I don't know.
I don't know. No, I'm not sure.
That was different.
So Matthew Shepard, no.
Boys Don't Cry, because that was she was...
She was like what would be today a trans person, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm getting confused with my quarter century old transgressive LGBTQ films.
Yeah.
Which says something.
Transgressive.
Oh, shit. I don't know. I just think this was pretty bad. And Jonathan Taylor Jenkins Reid needs to, like, do something different.
Jonathan Taylor? That's a 90s reference. Fucking
Jonathan yeah, I was trying Taylor to go for
Thomas.
That.
Wow, okay.
He needs to do some home improvement. That's the sound the ladies make.
Do you try putting some putty in that payload bay door?
Oh, 4,000 RPMs. Did we talk about, have you ever seen that clip from, it was like the Dana Carvey show was on after Home Improvement for like the 1 year that Dana Carvey show existed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For
yeah.
like 4 episodes?
It was a total bomb. But I don't know why the title of the show like had a sponsor in it. And so they show, you know, back in the 90s, they'd have like, on this Thursday, on a very special ER, you know, and they'd like tease the episode. And so they have the one where it's like, this Wednesday on a very special Home Improvement, and Jonathan Taylor Thomas's character like might have cancer. He's like, I don't want to die, Dad. He's like, oh, you won't die, son. We're going to beat this. And it's like, oh, fucking really heart-wrenching, you know, 90s sitcom moments. And like, all that and a Barks Root Beer presents the Dana Carvey Show at 8:30. Jesus. So who should read this book? Because everyone's going to. Who should?
Everyone's
though?
Going to.
If for those who read it because they liked the space stuff, they should just read The Martian by Andy Weir because it's way better. Or there's way more space stuff. There is a ton of it, and it's awesome. Oh, but I have a feeling that's not most of the people who are going to read this book. It's mostly the people who like the romance.
It's not even good romance.
But it's not good. That's the problem. Like, it, Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo was just better than this. Because it was less predictable. You didn't know where it was going. There were some slightly annoying things about it. But at least it had some conflict.
It was creative.
Yeah, exactly. More creative.
Is she just doing, like, better. One genre at a time thing? What's going on?
I mean, so I feel like she actually does like space and NASA and stuff because she wouldn't have put in as much work into getting the parts right that she did. And, in you know, her sections about physics and, you know, quantum mechanics and we're all stardust. She clearly likes this stuff. But yet the story itself, which is what these books are for, the story itself just wasn't that good.
When she did Daisy Jones... That was her, right? I'm not making that up.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. They got into, like, the music aspect of things. And it was, you know, not a, you know, by any means a music aficionado's level understanding of it. But it was pretty solid. It was fine for, you know, like, what was eventually, essentially like a pop kind of thing. Pop understanding of it.
She frightened it.
Yeah, it was plenty good. But that was a good book. I liked that book a lot. It was a good story. It was interesting. She is a capable writer. She writes good stuff. This one just sucked. And it was, I mean, it didn't suck. It was boring. There's been way worse stuff that we read, but this was nothing special. If it wasn't written by her, no one would read it.
I found it cringy and I had to turn it off like quite a few times.
I can't do this.
I was like, oh, no. Oh, God.
Was it the little girl voice?
It wasn't that. It was like the actual things happening in the book. We're like, oh, come on. Oh, no. And then I would just stop it.
So my review on Goodreads is, in space, no one can hear you yawn. But this is, because it's so fucking boring, I'm just scrolling through Goodreads right now, and it is the fangirling of Taylor Jenkins.
I mean, anyone that's read it this close to being out is like a zealot.
Well, some people reviewed it 6 months ago when the book was announced, which means they didn't read it. They're just putting a 5-star review because they want to support the person because they're like a parasocial lunatic.
Yeah, she doesn't need your support. She's a millionaire. She's going to be fine.
The people who are, all I needed to know is Taylor Jenkins Reid wrote it. Or they're like, God damn it, this is heartbreaking. This is her best book ever. It's fucking not good. It's
objectively not her best book ever.
It's not her best book. It's not anyone's best book. It's a shitty book.
It might be someone's best book, but that's because they're bad at writing.
Listen, if Goebbels wrote this after that other one we read, this would be his best book. Sure. If the Camp of the Saints guy wrote it.
Just a book about space.
It's about the space lesbians.
If Goebbels wrote this in 1944, it would be fucking amazing. Man, that guy.
We really need to rethink him.
He was misunderstood. But
he definitely was misunderstood if he wrote this.
No, we understood him perfectly fine.
I just have more questions. Like, what?
Okay, so here's a review. Just a random person's review that has 76 likes on Goodreads. Oh my God, this was one of the most incredibly written books I've ever read.
Maybe she's only read two books.
This and Fox and Socks. I can't believe how much more there could be in a book. It's just this social media stuff has just ruined reviewing stuff. We need to undemocratize certain things.
I mean, you don't want to just leave
people
it to just
critics.
People
should not get to say these dumb opinions.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it. You just have to understand that any trash is going to have high reviews from people that like trash. It's not an objective rate. Like, even on Goodreads, we say this every time, 5 stars is not about, is it good? It's 5 stars is about, I loved it. And if I love eating shit popsicles, doesn't mean that's a good thing. It means I love it. And I'm tired of pretending I don't.
I wouldn't call this book a shit popsicle.
No, it's not. It's just, you know what? It's honestly
craftsmanship.
I expected better of it because I did like the last two of hers pretty well. I thought they were good and they were worth reading. This one is, you know, pop bullshit. As you build those ones were pop, pretty good stuff.
I hate it. I hate it so much. Kill it with fire. But I don't know. It's going to be a big, I'm sure they're going to like make a shitty movie out of it or a show or something. Or maybe this is it. Maybe people, her star will fade and she can go back to being whatever she was before.
No, she'll keep writing. This one will at least make a profit because, people liked her other books. And then she'll write another one and maybe it'll be better.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got a clunker here and there.
I just think the other books aren't great. They're just beach reads.
No, they're not like, capital G great. But I thought they were very good. I thought they were...
They're better than this.
Yeah. They're better than, average...
Fine.
Better than the average beach read, definitely.
All right. Well, I hate it the most, which is fine. I'm comfortable there. But tell us what you thought.
Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
And if you want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub and become a supporter of this malarkey.
And find us on social media, if that still exists when this comes out, and Goodreads at our name. Time is a flat circle, which means I don't know how it works.
Space-time is a flat circle. And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.